This is It Is What It Is with Carlton Palmer on Proper Sport.
Yes, hello and welcome along to another episode of It Is What It Is with Carlton Palmer. Darren's actually off again this week. He's off in the Lake District. So it's my turn to keep interviewing Carlton, but I'm enjoying it. So why wouldn't I not interview him? And of course, joining me on the line is the man himself, Carlton. How you doing, mate?
Yeah, great, mate. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad, not too bad. The weather again, you always say that the weather for the bank holidays in May is always really good, and it was on on the Monday just gone. I had a day off with the missus and the little son, but it's gone rubbish again now.
Well, that's the UK. My missus was just saying to me, because we fly back on the 23rd of June, and she was just telling me, last year, Carlton, remember, they had their 2 weeks of summer in May before we got back, and then the weather was crap in June.
It certainly seems like it's going to be like that again. It's actually raining, but I've just recently planted some grass seeds, so at least that'll be good for them.
Yeah, happy days.
Happy days indeed. Right, we're going to talk about the Champions League final. Obviously, Liverpool losing out 3-1 to Real Madrid. The playoff finals and all the fallout surrounding them in just 1 minute after this.
This is It Is What It Is with Carlton Palmer on Proper Sport.
Yes, so as mentioned, we're going to start with the Champions League final, Liverpool losing out 3-1 to Real Madrid. Do you think Madrid were deserved winners then, Carlton?
Yeah, I think they were. I mean, Liverpool had chances in the game. And I think, obviously, Salah going off was had a big impact on the game. But so did Real Madrid. Real Madrid had good chances in the game as well. So I think Real Madrid, you know, ran out worthy winners. Although, you know, you can't legislate for the two mistakes the goalkeeper made. You can't just legislate for that. Not at that level as well.
Yeah, we're disappointed to see. I mean, especially the second one. The first one, both of them, definitely. But the first one, you kind of thought one mistake. It's just a bit of lack of concentration. But the second one as well, he's not even like the teacher was a kid. I mean, I've never been a goalkeeper, but the teacher was a kid to get your body behind your ball and make a W with your hands. And he wasn't even doing that. And it, like you say, at that level, it's unforgivable.
Yeah, but I mean, it is. I mean, the basic mistakes, and you know, he will know that at the end of the day. But, you know, in that position you play, unfortunately, you make a mistake, it costs a goal. If you play centre-back or full-back, you make a mistake, it costs a goal. This is now a test of character for him. It doesn't make him a bad goalkeeper. He's had one bad game. This happens. What has to happen from him now is to show his character, to show his strength and get back out there. He's had a good season for Liverpool, hence why he's in the net. And just because he's had one bad game doesn't make him a bad player. I mean, don't get me wrong, if I'd have been playing in the game, publicly, I wouldn't have said anything, but behind closed doors, I would have had a go at him. But I've made mistakes in big games. You know, I made the mistake in the Carling Cup that cost us eventually cost us winning the trophy. I should have cleared the ball, and I didn't. I took a touch when I shouldn't have taken a touch. And you have to tell us, it does happen. When you play a lot of games in the season, you know, people remember your mistakes more than the good things you've done. And what you have to do is, I did, show strength of character, come back, and I got man of the match in the FA Cup final. That's what you have to do. You know, these things happen.
Well, I guess you'll be best person to speak about it the most, then, if you've been at a similar sort of scenario where you've made a mistake that's cost a trophy. But where does he go from here now, Karius? Because a lot of people are saying that he shouldn't be playing for the club again, but that's obviously a bit much.
I don't think you can say it cost a trophy, because I don't believe, you know, the mistakes are instrumental in the game. Mm. But you can't, I don't say it would have it cost them the trophy. I don't believe that. I thought Real Madrid were the better side. Salah going off injured, as I say, was instrumental. But I still think Real Madrid were the better side, you know. And so, therefore, you know, the mistakes are highlighted and blown out of proportion. Had he not made those mistakes, I still think Real Madrid would have gone on to win the game. And you know, that's not make excuses for the kid. That's the fact.
True. A lot's been made about the challenge between Ramos and Salah as well, which saw the Egyptian go off injured. Some people accusing Ramos of doing what he did on purpose. What did you make of it?
Well, people need to watch it again and watch it again and watch it again. first and foremost, Ramos is playing for Real Madrid and wants to win the Champions League. I believe that's his fourth Champions League.
Yeah,
I think you're right. We're not playing a tickle-tackle game. It's physical. He's their most dangerous player. But I'm going to defend Ramos now. Watch it again. See who locks arms first. Salah puts his arm into Ramos's arms first, right? As a defender, me as well, I'm going to lock his arm. They then fall. So, you know, at the end of the day, I don't think there was any intent from Ramos to injure Salah deliberately. But at the end of the day, he's locked into his arm. He's locked his. They've gone down. It's an unfortunate incident. But at the end of the day, if you watch the game, you watch some of the interceptions, some of the clearances that Ramos has made, he's a top, top player. Now, if people are accusing him of being a dirty player and he does this all the time. Listen, if he makes a bad tackle and he gets a red card, as he has done in the past, he's cost his team in the past because he's done that. So they lose out. As far as I'm concerned, it was a nothing challenge, really, and it's just unfortunate that Salah fell awkwardly and he ended up getting injured. I think a lot's been made out of it. That's not really there. And as a defender, let me tell you, I'm out there to win the game. So if you're their danger player, I remember, if you're a lead supporter, I remember when we were playing Liverpool and Stan Collymore was in his pomp at the time. Me and John Pemberton made our minds up before the game that any chance we got to put it on him, we'd put it on him. He was off inside 20 minutes and we ended up winning the game. That is just the way it goes. That is, you know, a bit that I'm missing of the game because the referees blow up all the time. It's players who have ability, but can they take that physical side when it comes on top of them? The great players can, and great players can withstand it and still deliver.
You know, I'm glad you said that, Carlton, because I just think it's a lot of straw clutching going on from Liverpool fans here, and I think you're the first person I've spoke to that has seen the bit that I've seen where Salah locks arms first. So I'm glad you've said that. Do you think it is a lot of straw clutching and they're just looking for excuses?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And looking to blame Ramos. I would never go out intentionally to hurt a player. But let me tell you, I'm going out with the intention to win. I'm going out with the intention to be physical. And Ramos is that type of player. But in that particular instance, right, Salah locks his arm first. And then, because Salah looked at that and tried to put his arm in there, and then Ramos, as any defender would do, has locked his arm. Then they've both gone to ground. He could have injured himself exactly the same.
Totally agree with you. I think anyone that's played the sport or any contact sport at any level, even amateur level, would understand exactly what you're saying there. We have to talk about Gareth Bale's goal as well, the first one, the overhead kick. Some people saying it's the best ever goal in a CL final. What do you think of it?
Well, I haven't seen many better in any kind of competition.
Yeah.
I think it's an absolutely fantastic take. There's no other words or superlatives you can give for that. It's a fantastic technique, fantastic finish. And if anything, it's a fitting goal to win the Champions League. So let's not talk about the goalkeeper's mistake. Let's utilise over what has been a brilliant piece of technique to win the Champions League final.
Yeah, totally agree. Fantastic. I was watching it. I was sat at home and it was just one of them goals where you just have to stand up and clap. It was absolutely fantastic. And the only ones that I can think in the Champions League final that come anywhere close to that were Zidane's in 2002, I think it was, and Mandzukic's last year. But I think for me, it's better than both of them because Mandzukic sets himself up last year and Zidane has a bit of time to set himself up as well in the 2002 one, just thinking off the top of my head. So for me, I think it's definitely the best. Best in the Champions League final, definitely. We'll move on to other finals as well now. Fulham, they're back in the Premier League. They will be next season anyway after beating Aston Villa. What did you make of that game? So I as well predicted a Villa win.
Yeah, I did, but that was more out of hope for my son who went down for the day because he's a Villa supporter. You know, the simple fact is, right, you know, Wolves won the league, Cardiff finished second, Fulham finished third. And on the day, the right result was given. I think Steve Bruce did the best he could do on the day, which was sitting there in the first half. They gave away 45 minutes, but I can see what Brucey was trying to do. Get to the game into the latter stages. You know, And to be fair, there was nothing in the game. Even though Villa weren't doing any attacking in the first half, the goalkeeper never had any work to do. It was poor, you know, John Terry, you know, I'm not a big fan of John Terry's and never have been, right? So, you know, I know he's getting on a bit now. And he doesn't want to come out of that hole. So, you know, the fullback gets dragged in and the goal comes from that situation. But the second half, I thought Villa were the better side without really making the goalkeeper work. And then when they went down to 10 men, funny enough, Fulham kept the ball better than Aston Villa with 10 men. So I think the right side over the course of the season and over the course of that game was the right decision for them to get promoted. And I'm delighted for the club.
With your son being an Aston Villa fan, I'm sure you'll be well aware of the uncertain future for the club now with some financial issues and looks what and obviously a lot of rumours about a lot of players leaving, such as Grealish and things like that, and some papers saying they need to raise as much as £45 million this summer through sales. Tough time ahead for Villa.
Yeah, well, it's that second season, isn't it? You get the parachute money. You know, it's £160 million for getting promoted to the Premier League. And then you get that parachute money from that first season. So you gamble in keeping the players on those salaries in the hope of making that quick return. You know, they brought John Terry in and so forth. So you hope to make that quick return. If you don't make that quick return, then you've got to make changes, obviously, because you can't go into that second season. You know, they're restricted and hampered by their financial fair play. So you've got to make changes. You know, I think part of the problem is the boy Grealish. You know, I think he's a mercurial talent. I thought he played well in the game, but he plays in that nothing position. And I don't think they really have a position for him where to play, whether he plays wide or whatever. And when you have a player like that, right, he has to, if you're going to play that false number 10 role, you've got to really dominate the game. You know, you look at Messi, he doesn't have a free role because he can play in a system. He can play somewhere, whether it's on the right or the left or in the hole. And if he plays in that, you know, false number 10 position, he causes problem. He drags people in, he drags people out. Grealish, for me, whilst he played well, never really hurt the opposition in anything he really did. So when people are talking about he's worth 35 million and this, that, and the other, I wouldn't pay 35 million for him because I don't have a position for him. And he's not creative enough or devastating enough for me to play him in that false number 10 position.
Do you think he'll still be at Villa next season?
Well, I mean, I think there'll be clubs who'll be looking at him, that is for sure. And a lot will depend on the offer that, you know, if they're talking about they've got to raise 45 million, I think he's the obvious one that will be leaving the football club, you know?
Yeah, it certainly looks that way. I think there's a few teams interested. Manchester United is a rumour as well, but I'm not sure how much substance there is to that rumour. Elsewhere in the playoffs, it was Rotherham that bounced back at the first time of asking in League One after beating Shrewsbury. They'll be in the Championship next season.
No, I'm delighted from Rotherham because obviously I live in Sheffield and I want the local teams to play well. But it was gutty for Shrewsbury. I mean, when you finish, you know, they finished 8 points ahead of Rotherham in the league. I mean, the playoffs are brilliant. And this is why they're there for, they're entertaining. I mean, even my boy came back to me and said to me when he went the weekend, even though Villa didn't win, he said, "Dad, it was great. The fans were buzzing." And, you know, it's a great way, you know, for the tournament to end. And so I see it from the fans, but I feel for Shrewsbury. They were, you know, finished eight points ahead of Rotherham, but really delighted for Rotherham. Bounced back at the first attempt. And obviously, because they're local to where I live, I'm really pleased for them.
Yeah, definitely pleased for them. All three clubs bounced back at the first time of asking in that league as well, Wigan, Blackburn and Rotherham. Coventry, one of your former clubs, they won the League Two final against Exeter, a big city club that finally looks to be on its way back. I'm sure with them being a former club of yours, you must be delighted.
No, I was well pleased for a lot of reasons. A, a former club. B, for Cyril, you know. I see DM Dublin's did a tweet beforehand. Come on, guys, do it for Cyril. You know, I was delighted for them. You know, it wasn't so bad for Coventry with Exeter. There was only 5 points in it. You know, not a massive margin, really, although Exeter still did finish above Coventry. But again, a former club of mine, and I was delighted for Mark Robbins and delighted for the club.
Unfortunately, Carlton, we are coming up towards the end of the podcast, but this is the time where I always ask you if there's anything that you've seen that you want to chat about.
Yeah, I do. I want to talk about the press, about the way they're attacking the England team again before a major championship. They do this all the time.
Yeah.
They undermine the England team, and then they wonder why we underperform. The press seem to have a witch hunt against Raheem Sterling. The boy has had an absolutely fantastic season. They should be pulling him up so he goes into the World Cup full of confidence, full of energy. Yet every time they're dragging him down, he's had a gun on his leg, right? And all of a sudden, he's now had to come out for the meaning of what he was done. His father was shot when he was 2 years of age, right? So there's a deeper meaning to the gun on his leg about, you know, he shoots with his right foot, and there's a deeper meaning to it. But straight away, the media are getting on and calling for him to be removed for the England squad. I mean, what's going on? You know, at the end of the day, he's one of our most talented players. But instead of the media building up, they're looking for every story, looking to pull him down. And it's just really, really sad, you know, because we should be going into the World Cup with our young players now feeling full of confidence. I seen somebody tweet this morning because Piers Morgan didn't ask for Raheem Sterling to be removed from the England squad, but he said he should remove the tatter. And somebody tweeted, well, hang on, Piers, you support Aston Villa, they call the Gunners, and they got a gun on their badge, cannon on their badge. So that's okay, right?
Yeah, I saw that tweet myself, and someone actually sent a mocked image back of the Arsenal crest without the cannon on it. And then someone tweeted about, well, saying you can't call the club Arsenal because that literally means, you know, a place to hold weapons. So then the crest was literally just a shield. So it is a bit hypocritical. I understand the point that you're making there.
So, but what I'm saying to you is, right, we've got to stop all this. We have these, I know the problem is now, and a lot of it comes from jealousy. And I'll be honest with you, it was coming in towards my end of time when I was playing football. These reporters, when they first started off, when I started playing for England under 21s, the reporters were earning good money. And they were treated by the FA to come on the planes, to come into the hotel and whatever. And now, because the gulf has become so big between the players and the reporters in terms of the salaries, in terms of access, they think it's fair game to just attack the players all the time and look for excuses to have a go at them all the time. And it's wrong. They should. I've always said they're there to print news, not make news. Right. And what we should be doing is, as I am excited, really excited about our prospects in the European Championships, sorry, in the World Cup, and they should be getting behind the team. If then we fall down, if then players don't perform, then they can criticise. But give us a chance first. Give the boys a chance first. You know, what has the boy Raheem Sterling done to anybody apart from ignite the Premier League this season and show how he's improved as a person and as a football player? What has he done to them for them to try and annihilate him in the way? The season finished. He got a private jet to go on holiday. And they're talking about that. Well, hang on a minute. The boy earns 300 grand a week. Why can't he hire a private jet?
Yeah, exactly.
He's just won a Premier League title.
I totally agree. I think they do tend to victimise Raheem more than anybody. Like, he gets a private jet and he's mocked for that. And I think a couple of years ago, he got an EasyJet flight somewhere like Barcelona or somewhere in Europe, probably, because that's what EasyJet do. And he was castrated for that. It just seems that he can't win, Raheem.
Well, most of the players do now, to be honest with you, because they earn so much money, right? The price of, if you're taking your family and you go first class, right? You know, you go on Emirates now, first class, you're looking at 10 grand a ticket. So if you're taking five people away, that's 50 grand. You can get a private jet for that.
Exactly.
You know? And he's earning that type of money. I don't get that. I don't get the jealousy. Maybe I'm lucky like this, like I've said to my missus. I'm lucky that I enjoyed playing football at the time. I didn't play for money, but I earned good money and I earned the time. And now I'm not like other players who look and say, oh, well, so-and-so's. No, I earned good money at the time and I had a good time. I've looked after my money so I can enjoy the life I live now. These players are fortunate because the Premier League is what the Premier League is now and it generates huge revenues. But without the players, there is no revenue. So why shouldn't those players? I have an understanding that average players are earning a lot of money. There's nothing you can do about that. That's just part and parcel of the old package. But when somebody's just finished the season, won the league title, had the season of his life, if he decides he's had his bonus from Man City, he earns over 300,000 a week, why would somebody begrudge him from getting a private jet to go on holiday? He doesn't want to go to the terminal where he's going to get mobbed. He doesn't want to come through the other side where he's got to wait. So why not get a private jet? I would do exactly the same, and I have done exactly the same in the past.
Yeah, totally agree with you. And I'm happy you brought that point up because it was something that I had missed out, and it is something that is definitely, definitely worth talking about. But thanks again, Carlton. Thank you for joining us here at Proper Sport for another episode of It Is What It Is with Carlton Palmer, and we'll speak to you again next week.
Okay, thank you very much.